Welcome to the Development Podcast, a podcast that offers practical strategies to further develop yourself, your organization, and those around you. Learn how to maximize your influence by hearing from entrepreneurs, industry professionals, and business leaders share about their ideas and experiences. I'm your host, Martin Manosolvas. Thank you again for tuning in. Hi everyone, thank you so much for listening in. Today we'll be focusing on authenticity, what it really looks like, the benefits behind it, and how to strive for it. Authenticity is about presence, living in the moment with conviction and confidence, and really staying true to yourself. However, aiming to be authentic, it doesn't always come easy, and I know for myself it's easy to focus on what others may be saying and conform to that, rather than striving to be my full authentic self and embrace imperfections. But it's no doubt that people rooted in authenticity create enormous benefit for themselves and those around them. And in the long run, it helps create enormous trust. Joining me today is Erica Gerdes. Erica is a former global business executive at Google and now focuses her time as an authenticity development speaker, executive coach, and writer. She is the designer of The Art of Undoing, which focuses on helping others live a fuller range, strengthening connections, improving productivity and well-being, and amplifying our impact. It's about how we make a lasting change for ourselves, our teams, our communities, and the world. As Erica says, you're most impactful when you are your most authentic, and the world needs the impact that only you can make. So Erica, thank you again so much for joining. I'm excited to hear your thoughts around this. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Absolutely. So can you start us off with sharing a bit about your experience and your journey leaving Google and pursuing executive coaching?
Absolutely. I worked at Google for 12 years. And so it was the equivalent of, in the United States, going through K-12. So, I mean, I really got my education at Google. And I absolutely loved it. I drank the Google Kool-Aid. I was very, very googly, total Google cheerleader. In fact, even though now I've been gone from the company for just over 2 years, you'll notice when I talk about Google, I mostly still say we, because I consider myself having graduated from there instead of left the company, because that's really what it felt like for me. And when I started at Google, which was about a year or so after I finished my master's degree in Wisconsin, I started off in the ad sales side of the business, approving the ads manually that you saw on Google.com. This is 2006. So I was not using my education really in that particular role, but it certainly helped me get the job. In my final role at Google, though, I was, as you said, a global business executive overseeing one of Google's largest global partnerships and really developing all the strategy and ensuring that we had a deeper, more well-developed relationship with one of Google's partners. And the reason I left was not because I didn't love the company or even because I didn't love my job. It was because I really realized that as much as I did love the company and the job and my manager and my coworkers, I felt called to do something more impactful with my gifts and my passion and my drive and my motivation. And it really came down to feeling like I wasn't being authentic and really representing myself and what I was capable of in the work I was doing at Google. And so no matter how much I loved it, I felt like there was a part of me that was sort of withering away inside if I didn't at least go after my dream. And so I did ultimately leave Google, like I said, 2 years ago this month, in fact, I called it jump off the cliff and start a new business in a completely different industry. I'm now 40 years old. So I was 38 years old when I did that. I'm also a single mom with two little kids and no financial support. So I basically did the thing that nobody else does because most people say, well, I'd love to do something else, but I don't want to risk my lifestyle, or I'd love to do something else, but I have no idea what it is, or there are so many other people doing it, or, you know, insert thing here. And I'm really excited about having done it because now I can teach other people about what it's like to make true change and what's really, really required in order to do so. Because it's not about where we stand, it's about how we stand.
right? So in aiming to make that true change, what sort of barriers would you say prevent us or hinder us from being our most authentic selves? And how can we really overcome that?
I mean, there are the sort of logical barriers that our rational brains can talk about, like, you know, I'm not trained in, well, I was trained, but I don't have skills and expertise in this work and all of that kind of stuff. But in reality, all of those are tactical challenges. And it's really about the adaptive challenges that we have to overcome in order to really bust through those barriers. And so what I mean by that are, it's always mindset. As Tony Robbins says, success is 80% psychology and 20% mechanics. And that is really true. It's the Pareto principle, right? So 80-20. And it's almost entirely the barriers that we make up in our mind. And for me, I am a basically lifelong overachieving perfectionistic people pleaser. So I had a lot of barriers that I had to overcome in order to be willing to stop hinging my identity to achievement, and particularly overachievement, to stop allowing myself to be limited by perfectionism, which, you know, was great for me in a lot of ways, but it also really held me back and slowed me down in a lot of others. And also in particular, people pleasing. There are a lot of people who, you know, they get really far by people pleasing. We get really, really good at reading people and intuitively understanding how to show up and who we need to be in certain situations in order to have greater impact with those people. But when we do that and it becomes so second nature, it also means that we're actually diluting our true impact, because it's no longer who we truly are, but rather who we think we should be in order to please somebody else. And when we do that, we're no longer actually being true to ourselves or pleasing ourselves in the end. And so the biggest barriers that we all need to overcome are our own, period, the end. And the barriers that are our own often are related to our identities. And that's not something that a lot of people talk about or think about, but our identities are what hold us back. Those parts of ourselves we think we must be, or we should be, or even that we think we are, but in particular, what we can't be. All of those are actually limiting us from who we truly are and who we can be.
Right. I think it's so easy to fall into that as we must be kind of a mindset. But I'm curious, what does authenticity really look like? How can we really strive towards it?
I don't think authenticity looks a certain way. It's really about how it feels. I absolutely believe that authenticity is a feeling practice. And what keeps a lot of us from being able to be authentic is that we're looking for it. We expect it to look a certain way. We think we should be able to look outside and say, there's what authenticity looks like. There's me. And we know to head in that direction. And the reality is, authenticity, just to go back to what do I mean by authenticity before I answer this question, authenticity is becoming so widely used, I think it's in danger of becoming a cliche if it's not already. And so when I say authenticity, I don't just mean be your true self, be, you know, just be genuine or say whatever you're feeling or whatever. Authenticity, if we look back at the etymology of the words, the historical development of the word, it actually means to act in one's own authority or to be the author of our lives. And for most of my life, I was basically looking for somebody else to give me my answers. I was looking for, you know, a mentor or an advisor or a podcast or a book or an expert who could tell me what I should be doing in order to maximize my potential in my life or, you know, find happiness or whatever it is. And the reality is, when we are being authentic, it is about us being in control, taking the pen and paper back and choosing what happens in our lives next. It doesn't mean we're in control of the circumstances. It means we're in control of how we perceive them and what we do with them. So being authentic is about shifting from that place of reacting to our circumstances and to our fears, and instead becoming intentional about the steps that we take in the direction we feel we want to go that is the most accurate representation of who our true selves are. So how does authenticity look? It looks totally different for each person, and it's never linear. I made the huge mistake of thinking that authenticity was a linear path. It's not. It is a practice we commit to every single day and every moment of every day. And it's about tuning into what feels good and what feels right versus what looks good and what we quote unquote should do.
I love that. That shift from reacting towards being intentional. In a recent blog, you shared how we focus more on how or where we believe we are lacking, or how others are better dressed, more successful, more qualified, more attractive, more confident, richer, stronger. And I think there's a lot of truth in that, because often we find ourselves focusing our time thinking and making up for what we perceive we lack, rather than embracing who we are and our unique contributions we can make. Over time, this can be a destructive habit and hard to break out of. So I'm curious, what are some applicable ways to quit focusing so much on our imperfections and be our authentic selves?
I didn't even realize I was doing that for the most part. And so I think, and this is true with basically any stage of development, you know, if you look at any guidance across the world, most of it really starts with knowing ourselves. I can't remember who said that, but initially. And so awareness is really the key to everything, because the reality is, as much as we like to think that we are rational beings and that we are totally in control of, you know, how we show up and all of the other things that go along with our behavior, somewhere around 95% of everything that we think and do is unconscious. So that means that we don't actually know what we're doing most of the time. And so the first step in being able to overcome that, I call it the comparison game that happens inside of our heads, is to be aware that it is happening. So what I always recommend people to do very first thing is really start to pay attention to what's happening inside of your head. What are those stories that you're telling yourself constantly? And sometimes you can tell, you can just tune into what the stories are inside of your head, and you know they move from being white noise to clearer defined storylines. Mm-hmm. But often, because they've been happening so constantly, they stay as white noise and we forget to pay attention to it. So the better place often to start is actually to pay attention to your physiological response. So our bodies are constantly, our bodies often respond physically before our brains actually catch up, like our actual conscious thoughts catch up. So, you know, for instance, when you're walking into a classroom or a business meeting or into a party, hopefully there aren't a whole lot of those going on because of COVID right now. But in general, whenever you're walking into an experience, and it can be virtual or in reality, or I mean in person, notice what your body does. Notice what your mind does. Notice how you either puff up or shrink back as a result of other people in the room or the stories you're telling yourself about other people in the room. Almost all of us are doing this. We're thinking, I need to show up in a certain way in order to be perceived as smart or whatever. And all of that, again, goes back to identity. But for some reason, most of us think that we are the only ones who are insecure and that whatever we see in other people is their truth. And the reality is we are all going through this comparison game. All of us are very insecure people. And the people that we think of as confident are usually the ones that are, you know, showing up and bolstering themselves and posturing and all that stuff. That's insecurity 100% of the time. So when you recognize that you've got that physical response, check in with the story that you're telling yourself. Ask what it is, what does it mean? And then you can start to consciously shift out of that story and into just accepting the fact that that's happening. Not to say that you continue to do it, but you just say, okay, don't fight with it. Because when you fight with it, you're giving it the energy and then it's just going to keep going. And then you can just consciously shift to something else. Pay attention to you know, some other part of the experience that you're having. And that's really the best way to move through stuff. Because the more that you fight with or resist whatever the stories are in your head, the more they stick around.
Absolutely. And I think you bring up such a great point. Because, you know, often we can feel like everyone's focus on us and, you know, our failures, when in reality people are focused on themselves just as much. And so you know, that sort of idea that not everyone is just watching our every move, really a good point you bring up.
Can I piggyback on that one really fast? Because I think this is so important that I feel like most people forget, and it took me a very, very, very long time to learn. So if I can help people learn this earlier in their lives, fabulous. Even when people are actually paying attention to us. So for instance, you know, let's say I do something and I get some commentary about how people don't approve of it, or they begin to make fun of me, or I get feedback or whatever it is. And of course this happens at school and at work and everywhere in our lives, and especially with our families and friends. Most of us forget, we sort of think that whatever they are saying, whatever that feedback or opinion is objective. It is not objective. Every single one of us is perceiving live or perceiving the world and our lives through our own, what I call fear veils. And that is causing us to see the world in certain ways based on whatever some of our deeper fears are. And so they may be giving you feedback, but it is absolutely based on what they think is quote unquote right or wrong, not because it's right or wrong for you. So that may be their truth, but it does not mean it needs to be your truth with a capital T. And that is what authenticity is about having the confidence to stand in your truth with a capital T, no matter what somebody else's opinion is, because theirs is likely coming through their own fear veil. And it's not to say you don't have a fear veil, but the more that we can see what those fear veils are and how they're impacting us, the more we become a choice to not just react to them.
It makes a lot of sense. You know, other people, they're going to be able to perceive things differently, even just based off of their own experiences. And so although they may think it's right, that's not always the right move. It's a really great point you bring up. In a different article, in a different blog, you mentioned, but if we even look beyond that, no other single person in history has ever lived the life you have in the exact way that you have, with unique combination of experiences, talents, perspectives, thoughts, and skills. And I fully agree with that. I'm curious, what are the most effective ways to sort of identify those talents and abilities in us?
Going back to your previous question of us looking at what we feel we're lacking and playing the comparison game, I think the first thing we have to recognize that that's happening, because what keeps us from being able to see who we are is because we're so focused on who we're not. So when you can sort of like catch yourself doing that who I'm not thing or who I should be thing, that's all related to, again, to identity. In order to really embrace who you are, it comes down to recognizing what your values are, what your mission or purpose is, what your gifts are. And I'll tell you a little bit more about each of those, but the final one is what your unique experiences have been, because I absolutely know to be true that what we are intended to teach, we must first learn. So everything that you have experienced is preparing you for what is to come. It doesn't matter what those experiences were. There has been a unique combination of experiences that has very uniquely and exclusively prepared you for whatever it is that's to come in your life, all the good and all the bad. And so going back to the values and mission and gifts, most of us don't really recognize what our values are. And our values are these deep beliefs about what's important in our lives. And when we are aligned to our values, life feels sweeter. It feels easier. It feels more resonant. But when we're not, we often don't really realize what value is being stepped on. Instead, it's one of those situations where I'm sure we've all been there. We get into a situation and we're like, oh God, this just does not feel right. It sort of feels like, you know, we're swimming upstream or there's no grease on the wheels or whatever, but we may not necessarily be able to tell what it is. And so we think, okay, I'm just going to change the situation and then it'll get better. But unless we change the situation with intention, understanding that we need to move into a situation that is more closely aligned to our values, we will likely just feel the exact same way, but with slightly different scenery. And it happens at work all the time. We think, well, I don't like my team or my boss or my company, so I'm just going to go find a new one that's a better, you know, paying job or that has more prestige. But those often are made at this with the decisions being on the surface as opposed to what your values are. And that will constantly leave you feeling unfulfilled and like there's something missing. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of ways that you can find your values, but it's not a shopping list. So I highly recommend working with a coach to uncover your values. There are some free resources online. Personalvaluesassessment.com, I think, is a good one. The second piece is mission. And this is, what is it I feel I'm here on this earth to do? And it's not about, you know, a goal of achieve world peace, but rather, how am I supposed to, you know, what is the biggest and most truest expression of me, and who am I being in order to be able to have greater impact in the world? And that it's the thing that calls us forth, because you said something earlier about standing in confidence. Confidence comes from action. And so we often have to take action before we get confident. So that means that we're going to be scared. And so having a mission, having a thing that we are working toward that calls us forth, is actually what propels us to take that action, even in the face of fear. That's courage. And so I think that's super, super important. What is it that you believe is important about your life? What is the fullest expression of your life? And the final one is gifts. And gifts, I think, are different than strengths, because strengths makes it seem as though anybody can go learn these things. And, you know, given enough training, they can get to be at the same level as you. Gifts, on the other hand, are, if we think of them as gifts, they become not just our ability to have, but our responsibility to share, because gifts are always best when given and shared. And so our gifts are those things that we are naturally and innately good at. Often, and this is really important, often our gifts are actually what we consider our liabilities, but taken in a different context. So if you think about those things that just frequently get in the way, and that you're constantly overcoming and trying to compensate for, those are usually keys to some of your greatest gifts. You just might not be looking at them from the most sort of growth-oriented perspective.
Absolutely. And I fully agree. You know, confidence comes from action. And so that's why we need to have a mission that we're working towards. I really like, you know, how you define gifts versus strengths, and how gifts are things that we can naturally be good at. Not only do we have the ability, but we have the responsibility to share those with others. So that's kind of how we can contribute to others as well. To expand on that, why else would you say authenticity is important in leadership?
There are so many reasons. So my brain went to the emotional and the rational sides. So I'll go with both. Research shows that authenticity is one of the three core pillars of trust. And trust is, it's also the most challenging one to achieve. The other two being logic and empathy, for the three pillars of trust. And this is from Harvard professor Francis Frey, if you're curious. Trust, as we know, is one of the most critical aspects of developing deeper relationships, having Absolutely. Higher productivity, employee engagement, customer relations, basically all the good things in the world come from greater trust, and trust is hinged on authenticity. And what's important here is, from a physiological or biological or evolutionary perspective, we actually are hardwired to pick up on authenticity versus inauthenticity. Because again, going back to conscious versus unconscious, if the majority of what we're doing and the way we're behaving is unconscious, it is basically impossible for us to not have sort of tells that may contradict, like, you know, we may like do something that contradicts whatever we're saying. And so our brains will pick up on that stuff and trigger it as inauthenticity. And so authenticity is so important, again, because we're going to know whether what you're saying is true or not. If you are not in alignment with, you know, with what you're saying and how you're doing it, and how you're saying it, then we're going to be able to tell. And that's going to lead to decreased trust and decreased psychological safety. And again, all those good things. From an emotional standpoint, being authentic is also the thing that enables us to have more impact. So as you said earlier, there isn't a single other person who will ever live who is exactly like you. Like, that's just literally impossible. I mean, it's already a miracle that we're here if you look at the statistics of us being alive and having all of the exact same experiences you've had. So being able to be authentic without it means the world misses out entirely on some part of you that can never exist again. And so we owe it to ourselves and to the world to express ourselves as authentically and audaciously as possible, because the world will never be the same without it.
I agree. We owe it to ourselves and to others to be sharing our unique experiences and perspectives. So I love that. To take it further, how does this relate to, you know, expanding our personal and professional brand?
I would say authenticity is not what you do. It's what you undo. And what I mean by that, so my platform is, I call it the art of undoing. And it really is about undoing the stuff that holds us back from being able to be our true selves. And so, you know, authenticity isn't a skill that you apply or that you tap into. And there are TED Talks out there that say that that's exactly what authenticity is. I completely disagree with those because our fullest, most true expression of ourselves is not something that we do. It is what it is, us being ourselves fully and truly. And what I mean when I say undo is, again, most of us are simply reacting in our lives. You know, we move into a situation, we go into a meeting, and there is some story that triggers inside of our head that tells us that we need to act in a certain way, we need to protect ourselves. And it's all happening unconsciously. So all of a sudden, we are no longer being authentic. We are being some version of ourselves we think we should be in order to get acceptance or to protect ourselves. And that is the doing. And when we can recognize those patterns of self-protection and undo the power of them, then we can more courageously and more vulnerably walk into situations without those shields and allow ourselves to be seen fully and authentically. And the more we do that, the more confident we become and the more impact we have.
So as we wrap up, I'd like to end with one of my favorite quotes on authenticity by Simon Sinek. Authenticity is about imperfection, and authenticity is a very human quality. To be authentic is to be at peace with your imperfections. The great leaders are not the strongest. They're the ones who are honest about their weaknesses. The great leaders are not the smartest. They're the ones who admit how much they don't know. The great leaders can't do everything. They're the ones who look to others for help. Great leaders don't see themselves as great. They see themselves as human. Great leaders don't try to be perfect. They try to be themselves, and that's what makes them great. I love that because at the core of it all, it's about being genuine and real. So I wanted to hear your thoughts around that quote.
I absolutely love that quote, and I'm a big fan of Simon Sinek, and I'm glad that he used that, and I'm assuming that came from Leaders Eat Last or whatever that book was, but I think you're absolutely right. And that is contradictory to what you know, many of us think, is that a great leader is the one who knows all the answers. A great leader is the one who shows all strength and no weakness. And a great leader is, you know, insert whatever common belief is here. And the reality is all of that, again, that those are reactive patterns of self-protection. If we think that we cannot show weakness, that is a shield or a layer of self-protection. And whenever we do that, that is a direct impact between our authenticity and, or there's a, you know, sort of like a wall between our authenticity and the impact that we can have. And so when we are willing to put down those shields of protection, put down those shields of perfection, and allow ourselves to be seen for, you know, warts and all, our imperfections, our weaknesses, our needing to ask for help, that is when we, one, have greater impact, and two, give others permission to do the same. Because leaders are not there in order to be the strongest. They are there to call forth greater leadership from others. And any time we can allow others to step into greater authenticity and impact in their lives, we absolutely are changing the world. Changing the world doesn't require us to change every single person. It requires us to help change one.
Absolutely.
And every single time we step courageously into our own authenticity, we give others permission to do that too.
Absolutely. And it encourages others to do so.
Exactly.
Are there any final thoughts around authenticity that you'd like to share before we conclude?
I would say that authenticity is not nearly as easy as everyone, you know, somehow thinks that it is. Again, you know, we get well-meaning advice from college sponsors who say, go into an interview and just be your true self. That is so much easier said than done. Or, you know, whatever, a conversation with your boss or somebody that you're wanting to ask out on a date or whatever. It is not that easy. And again, when we go into those hard situations, it is very, very easy for us to automatically and reflexively move into self-protection, because self-protection is a physiological need for survival. All of that comes from our desire and need physiologically and from an evolutionary perspective to belong. And when we can start to see that our self-worth is not tied to our identity, that our belonging is not tied to our conformity, then we can start to undo those layers of self-protection and step into authenticity. It does not mean it is not difficult. It does not mean that it comes easily. It means that with practice, you will start to develop more confidence and you will start to have more impact. So I encourage you, step forth courageously into greater authenticity, because it is how you will have greater impact in this world.
I think it's so easy to, you know, you mentioned self-protection, that sort of brings a sort of comfort and it's easy to step into that. But you're right, it takes a lot and it takes practice to step in to be authentic. So Erica, thank you so much for your time. Your thoughts have just been really helpful and it helps us to see this from just a completely different perspective. So thank you for that and hope all the best for you. Listeners, if you have any questions, reach out to us and contact us via LinkedIn. But with that, thank you everyone for listening and have a great day.